that this is by far the most exciting interview I've done so far. I'm just really thrilled about this. I've been looking forward to talking with you.
There's so much going on. You know, when you ask me about day to day, I mean, every day is something. We come back to the table. Somebody had a story to tell about something that happened to them. And we realized.
You were like having group therapy every day,
weren't
you?
Oh, yeah, that's what it was. And that's why we had to sit there to talk this out. I mean, we had to talk guys out of wanting to fight someone, guys out of wanting to go home. You know what I mean? Guys would come there. You know, when you're living in that situation, the slightest thing can really upset you. You know, your girlfriend, something could go wrong in any little aspect of your life, and it can affect you, you know, because you're. We weren't really students, if you know what I mean. We weren't allowed to be just students. We were, you know, we were still those pioneers. We had to deal with a lot of things. You know, when they first came to this country, they had to survive. They didn't worry, there's no vacation. Every day we were trying to survive. So we were in a survival test. We couldn't think about homecoming, for instance. I mean, homecoming came, I didn't know, homecoming had no meaning to me. In Washington, really. It was bigger for me when I was in high school. You know, I remember guys asked me, "What are you going to do for homecoming?" I wasn't going to do anything. You know, it didn't have any meaning to me. I was struggling to make sure I could stay there with my grades because I had, you know, and you know, I didn't feel a part that first year. I didn't feel a part of the school to go to homecoming.
How about guys
didn't even go to the games. We didn't even go to the football games.
You didn't?
Most of the guys, I did, because I was I was in the sports, so I would go. I mean, the team stunk, so there was no real reason to stay there. And my dad and I, my second visit there, when I was in high school, my dad, we went to talk to the football coach. And I had played on a championship team. I had played quarterback. We went to talk to Buck Leslie. And he started telling me about the quarterback that they had there. He was ranked sixth in the nation and all this kind of stuff. And I said, "Well, that's all well and good, coach, but you don't win any games. You know, so what are you telling me? You're telling me that I can't compete with him, that he is going to be the quarterback? What are you telling me?" And he said, "Well, you know, he's going to be here. He's ranked sixth in the nation." And I kept saying, "Well, you don't win. So what, you know, what are you telling me?" So my dad was getting annoyed because I wasn't supposed to be speaking up to this man like this. But I just wanted to get everything out on the table. So I walked out of the office. I left my dad in there with me. I left, went in to talk to Coach Canfield. Because I knew he wasn't going to let me quarterback. And I wasn't going to play any other position. And I had never played on a losing team anyway, so I wasn't going to play there anyway. And I decided they couldn't win. They weren't going to win with those attitudes. So that was my experience with him. And some of the other guys had a problem with him the year before, as I found out the next fall, mm-hmm. that they had a problem with him. So, you know. But there were some good people. I want to mention some good people. I mean, Bill McHenry, his athletic director, made sure I was taken care of when I had my knee operation. Good man. I switched faculty advisors. My freshman year, I think, my sophomore year, to Barry Machado. And he liked basketball, so we could go and play basketball and I could talk to him. You know, he was more than my advisor. He was my friend, you know, and he was an advisor, but it had nothing to do with him being on the faculty. You know, he was, I could talk to him. And, you know, we could talk very frank. He would be frank with me, you know, when I had an attitude that wasn't quite right. He said, "Well, Gene, why don't you think about this?" You know what I mean? Instead of saying, "Gene, you're wrong," he would say, "Gene, why don't you think about that?" Because he was an educator, you know what I mean? He knew what he was there for, and that's the role of an educator. I mean, I'm there, I'm young and a little impetuous and you know, wanting to strike back at some things. And he would say, "Why don't you think about this?" He would make me think. And he helped me to grow as a man, young man, and as a student because I had him in class, you know. And he would tell me, "This is what you do to write a paper. This is what I'm looking for when I ask you a question on a test." I mean, to me, that's what he was there for, to make me improve. And I started to improve as a student, my sophomore year, my freshman year was a struggle, and I was just struggling. But I knew that Washington would make me a student, make me a better student. I knew that, and I was prepared for that. I didn't want to deal with a professor that was prejudiced or racist, but I knew that I had some work to do. And some of the other black students who were really good students really were inspirational. You know, they inspired me because I could see that they were a little bit sharper than I was. And guys like Bill Hill, who's a judge in Atlanta, mm-hmm. and Johnny Morrison, who's in Portland. I knew these guys were sharp. And they, even though they were only a year older than me, you know, they were, they inspired me. They were my role models, you know. And I wanted to be as good students as they were, you know. Even though I knew they weren't getting the grades that they should have gotten. But I knew they were bright guys. The professors knew they were bright guys.
So, were you able to pretty quickly figure out which professors were sympathetic and
We weren't looking for that sympathetic. We were looking for fair.
Well, that's what I mean.
Yeah.
I mean, that's
well, they would
sympathetic
tell, the,
maybe.
The guys
the right
ahead
way.
Of me would say, when it was time for me to pick my classes, uh-huh. I would go to them.
Yes, that's what I'm asking.
Before I would go to my faculty advisor, and I would say, this is the classes I need to take because I'm in history. And they would say, well, don't take him, and don't take him, and don't take him because he's not fair.
Mm-hmm.
And avoid him, and avoid him. Or they would say, take this guy because he's fair, he's interesting, and you'll get something out of the class.
And were there enough of those people?
Well, we all graduated, so obviously there were.
But were there enough that you felt like you weren't cheated out of some courses you'd like to have taken?
Yeah. I mean, there were more Washington Lee gentlemen there than there were not. I mean, I don't want to get the impression that most of the professors were good men, good people. Mm-hmm. There were just very few that were, you know,
mm-hmm.
I thought were, had a problem. I mean, most of them were fair. I mean, it's a good school. It's a great school. And most of them were fair. I mean, it was new to everybody, this integration thing.
Sure.
But there were people that you just avoided, and I avoided them, you know, to the extent that I could. Mm-hmm. I mean, if they were in a history department, then I had to deal with them. You know, like they said, don't take Jefferson Davis Futch, the third, okay, who I was told didn't like women, blacks, nothing. He believed in the monarchy, you know. Have you met him?
Yeah.
Okay, you know what I'm talking about. They said, don't take him. He's never taught a black, doesn't want blacks, don't take him. And I didn't have to take him because I was really into American history and he's teaching the European stuff. But I said, I want to take him. He's going to teach me. Because all the white guys said he was great, that he was funny, he was interesting. And I'm saying if they think he's good, then he's going to have to tell me I can't take his class because you have to go and ask him. So I marched up in his class, in his office, doing his office hours, I think they call them. Walked in there, he looked up, he was a little surprised. And I introduced myself, and I said, I'm a history major, and I would like to take whatever that course was. And he said, what are your grades in history? I told him. He said, okay. He says, you have to wear a tie to my class. Every day. I said, I own a tie. He said, I expect you to be here every day. I said, I expect to be here every day. And he said, who's your advisor? I told him, Machado. He said, okay. I said, thank you very much. I'll be here. And I enjoyed his classes. I loved his classes. I mean, I knew where he was politically. And I don't know if he knew me where I was because he never asked me, but I understood that, and I enjoyed his class. And when I sat down in that class, he looked at me. The guys in there were shocked that I was in there. I sat in the back, and I enjoyed his classes. And I took every class I could with him.
Really?
But
not
I
just
could.
One?
No.
Not just one?
No. I enjoyed it. I felt that whatever grade I got from him, I would earn. In the first test I got back, I felt I was ready for him because I had heard all this stuff that he was what he was. And he was all right with me. And to me, that's what it's all about. He was fair. He had his ideals. He had his... He's very opinionated. He's funny. I enjoyed him.
So did everybody have to wear a tie to this class?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, everybody wore a tie to this class. It was a requirement. I mean, guys were in there with jeans and ties. You know, I had a tie on.
Now, you were... When had conventional dress code fallen by the wayside? Not very far ahead of you.
The year before, I think they had gotten rid of that.
Yeah.
But guys were still wearing ties, you know.
So the upperclassmen were probably still in that.
I was there during the age of revolution now, you know, the Vietnam thing. They had the big sit-in, I think, in 70
that
or 69.
70.
Mm-hmm. Okay, they had the big, you know, and they were hippies walking around, and they were our friends, the blacks and the hippies, and we got along fine. And so they were there. There were revolutionaries there. There was guys bucking the system, more white than black. I mean, we were conservative compared to some of these other guys, because we couldn't afford to be too radical. We were radical, but just by our color, mm-hmm. and we formed the Student Association for Black Unity. There. I think that was formed in 71. And we used to wear these jean jackets with the red, green, and black patch on the back. It had Cebu and Washington Lee University. And that was just a... There were a lot of students that hated that organization. They didn't understand why the organization was there, why the administration would allow us to have this black separatist organization on campus. Occasionally, there was a white student who wondered why he couldn't join Cebu. There was a lot of animosity because we formed that organization. I think we had the first Black History Week my freshman year. I know we did because my uncle died during that week. And people were resistant to that, students. Maybe some professors. They didn't know why we had to have that. They didn't know why we had to do anything, you know. And we had to fight for that week. I don't know where we found all the money. I'm sure, there were always people in the administration that would give us money to do what had to be done. And
there's always money in Washington.
That's right. And they saw that we got what we needed to do what we had to do. Mm. And our functions weren't that well attended, you know, by the white students. I mean, my friends, you know, that used to hang with me, the white guys, they would come. A couple of guys I played basketball with would come.
What kind of functions did you have?
We just had speakers to come in. You know, we had two or three speakers came in. I think we had a choir to come in and sing some, you know, spirituals, Negro spirituals. And we had the black ball at the end of the week, which was really a very nice formal affair, a very nice affair. And that turned a lot of people off, you know. You're walking on Washington Lee's campus and you see a sign saying, the Black Ball. And I missed the very first one because I had to go home for the funeral. I was really disappointed because I had really had a good date all lined up and I missed that one.
So you had a black ball. Did you all go to fancy dress?
No.
In your whole 4 years, you never went to
fancy
dress?
Oh, did I go that year? Yeah, I went. Uh-huh. I went as I got older, yeah. Uh-huh. I mean, I was not going to go to Washington Lee and not experience the mock convention fancy. I mean, I wasn't going to leave there and have isolated myself. You know, I mean, I grew up with white kids. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So I played with them. You know, when I went to Washington Lee, that was really an experience for me. I had, you know, like I said, I grew up with white kids. So I was not used to white kids like the ones I met at Washington Lee. Okay. But I wasn't going to let them keep me from fancy dress or anything. I was going to do what a normal student did.
And did most of the black students go?
No. No. Mm-mm. I think the first fancy dress I went to, I may have been a junior, and I think just me and Elf went, the guy that was in my class. That he and I went, and two or three of us. The other guys didn't go. Mm-mm. They never bought into it. Most of the guys in that first group of us didn't buy into the fancy dress, homecoming, anything. Didn't stand for swing, and you know, there was a lot of resentment. There was a lot of protest going on in the first couple of years. I remember one time we weren't going to sing for the national anthem, stand for it. But I always had a problem with that because my uncles had all fought in the war. And I had a cousin who was fighting in Vietnam at that time. So I had a problem with that, you know.
You didn't have any problem with standing up for the national anthem?
No.
That's what you're saying?
I'm saying
okay,
I'm trying to. Well, there were guys that didn't want to stand mm-hmm. for the national anthem or the swing, but the national anthem I could stand for because in my family they all fought for that flag. So I would never disrespect them. Or the flag, really. But the swing, you know, I pick and choose when I stand for the swing. You know, it didn't do much for me. When I first got there, by the time I graduated, though, I had bought into the swing.
You'd bought into the whole program. You stayed and went to law school, right?
Yeah. I think Wesley's a great school. I had a great time there, in spite of all of that. I mean, there were some bad times there, but there were more good than bad. I mean, I made a lot of road trips. I made a lot of friends. I had to mature into it too. I mean, you know, I was young and young, you know, when I got there. But I made a lot of friends there. They're still my friends today. My brother was inducted into the Hall of Fame back in October, the first black to go in the Hall of Fame. And John Clow, a white man, was here, and he and I went there, met in Lexington, to attend the ceremony. John Clow lives in Alaska, okay? He was there, okay? He and I, we've always been there for each other.
And you were his best man?
I'm the best man at his wedding.
Uh-huh. Okay. How do you spell his name?
C-L-O-U-G-H.
Wow, okay.
A very courageous young man, because he caught hell freshman and sophomore year because he was my friend. I mean, he had white friends who said, look, you, John, we like you, but why do you have to hang around with Gene or E, which is my name? I mean, why do you do that? You know what I mean? He probably lost dates because we were together. I mean, he would have had a better time there. He may have graduated from Washington Lee had he not been my friend. Because it cost him a lot, I think. But, you know, he was always there for me. I'm always there for him. We will always be there for each other, no matter what.
He probably got the better end of the deal.
You know, but he's all, we, you know. And Mark left after freshman year. I think they ran him away. He couldn't take
the Jewish
kid? The Jewish kid.
Really?
Yeah, he was very unhappy there.
Hmm.
But Mark had a car. He didn't have to drive, so Mark gave me the keys to his car. And I'm sure that kept me in Lexington, because I had a car. I had access to the car. My parents hated that, but, you know. But Mark didn't like to drive. And Mark would go home with me, okay? To this southern town, go home with me, and eat food that he shouldn't have been eating. You know, my parents loved him. They loved John. And they just became part of our family. You know, I was in Mark's wedding, okay? I was in a Jewish wedding. Years after we graduated, I was in law school. Yeah, I was going into law school, I think, when he got married after I graduated in the summer. He called me when I was in law school. I was in law school. He called and said, Gene, I want you to be in the wedding. And I said, Mark, I love you, but you don't have to do this. I will come. I'll be there, and we have a great time. But I don't have to be in the wedding. I appreciate you asking me, but you don't have to do that because I know, even though your parents will go for this, I don't think your bride is going to go for this. Her parents. He said she's fine with it. you know. Well, she was. Her parents were like almost fainted when I walked in there. I got married in Flint, Michigan. It was, whoo. And I drove up there in my car, my dad's car. And Johnny White with me. He's another guy that went to Washington. And we drove up there. And I was in this wedding. It was an interesting week we spent up there. But those are the friends I met there. And we've been friends forever.
It is a place that makes friendships. Yeah. It's very
because clear. Most people there are good people. But you know, that first couple of years, it was not a happy place. You know, we made the best of it. And we had so many stories to tell about things that happened to us. You know, I remember Parents Weekend, and I was walking across campus, and this elderly alumnus came up to me and said, boy, can you tell me where such and such is? And he had the little, you know, the little alumni thing on. And I said, yes, sir, I can tell you where it is. In fact, I'll show you if you like, you know. And he said, fine. So I don't know where he went. I took him wherever it was he wanted to go. And he had graduated, I think, in 40s or something. He's an older, elderly man. And we were talking. And he said, well, how do you like working here? I said, I don't work here. He says, you don't? He says, you live in town? I said, well, I go to school here. He says, you do? I said, yeah. He said, you know, I didn't know they had colored boys here. I said, yeah, we've been here for a couple of years now. You know? He said, really? I said, yeah. He said, how do you like it? I said, getting along pretty good. I said, good and bad times. And he said, wow. You know, he actually said, damn. I didn't know that. He said, this is interesting. He says, come on a walk with me. So we talked, you know. He said, he just couldn't believe it. That, you know. And then at the end, I wish I knew his name. He says, I shouldn't have called you boy, should I? I said, probably not. I said, you probably shouldn't have said that. I said, but, you know, we got past that, didn't we? He said, yeah, we did. And we shook hands and we left. And he went. I think I took him to the library. I don't really know where I took him, but, you know, it was interesting because we were from two different worlds, but we had something in common. That we were on that campus. And I was gonna have that little button in a couple of years. And halfway through the walk, he realized I was gonna have that, you know. And I think he was annoyed at first, and by the time we got to where we were going, you know, I don't know if we liked each other, but we understood that we were going to have something in common. And he realized he shouldn't have said boy. But he appreciated the fact, and I had grown. I think I was probably a sophomore, junior. And I took him, instead of saying, I don't know where that is, mm-hmm. which I would have done when I was a freshman. I said, fine, I'll take you. You know, because I bought into what a Washington gentleman is. You know, and I teach my son, I don't say, I was raised a bit gentleman, not the Washington League, but I was raised that way, so. And I respected my elders, so I took him. And he caught me on a good day. A bad day, I may have said something else to him. But it was always interesting when the alumni would come and see the guys who were not there when it was integrated and probably didn't want it to change. To see their reactions when they saw us, you know, and we always watched that. You know, we had the advantage of knowing our situation and just watching people and see how they would react. And sometimes we probably would do things, you know, being a little mischievous, just make people react to us, you know, and that was part of the fun that we had, you know. But there was an occasion when one of our the black guys was accused of an honor violation in the biology department. He was doing an experiment, I think, with a white girl who was probably an exchange student from, you know, Sweetbriar or somebody. Mm-hmm. They could come there their junior year, I think. They were doing an experiment. He was doing the work. She was taking the notes. Okay? So at the end of the day, she says, well, here are the results of the experiment we're doing. So he writes the notes down. I'm sure that's what everybody did. They were in these groups. You know, people who did the work, they all had the same results of whatever it is they were doing. He was accused, I don't know who accused him, if it was the professor, I think it was. I don't think it was another student. But he was accused of an honor violation. I was a junior. He was in my brother's class, freshman class. So he was very upset. He was crying, you know, he really wanted to go to Washington Lee's, and you know, they're gonna kick him out for cheating. And so we had a Cebu meeting, and we discussed this, and we listened to him. And we knew he that this kid would never cheat. Willie Harrison was his name. He would never cheat. And it was obvious what had happened and what was happening. So we decided that we would not take that any. We would all leave school. If they kicked him out, we would leave. And I think almost all of us, maybe two or three guys, said they weren't going to do that. But we said that if they kicked him out for nothing, we had to go. And we communicated that to the powers that be, Huntley on down, that, you know, we believed in the honor code. And if you cheat, you lie, you cheat, you steal, you have to go. But this was not that. And we were going to take a stand. If that was going to happen, if anybody arbitrarily could do this and get rid of a black student, then we were not safe. And we had to go. And there were guys that were sitting outside that. We were sitting outside the courtroom that night. There were guys sitting there who were seniors. I was a junior. But I had decided I was going to Virginia Tech. That you know, I was going to leave. And I told my brother, I said, you know, you just got here. He's a football star. I think he was honorable mention All-American freshman year. I said, you got to make a decision. He said, well, I'm going too. So we decided that was it. Now, when he came out of there, he was innocent. I'm sure there was some special dispensation because those students were going to get rid of him. I believe. Maybe they saw the light. Maybe they did. I don't think so. But when they came out of there, he was innocent. You know. There was another case where a guy was accused of cheating. Two black kids were accused of cheating because they had similar homework or something. Now, they studied together, but they didn't do their homework. You know, they would talk about it, and they, you know. And I don't know what kind of class this was. It was kind of to be a science or math class. The professors saw, they had the same tutor. That's what it was, they had the same tutor. The tutor was showing them how to do this work. So guess what? They did it the way the tutor showed them to do it. Mm. And they did it the same way. Mm. I was in law school by this time. The professor says they cheated. Now, who would cheat? Who, you know, these guys had been there. Who would hand in the same work if they thought they were cheating? You know what I mean? So anyway, they went to the trial, and there was a lot of nonsense. Again, we were up in arms because we knew this was. We were really mad because the professor did this. He should have known better. And what happened was one of the kids took the blame so the other could stay there.
Wow.
That's right. We're all in a room, and this kid says, I will go, because he was a freshman, I think. He just got there, I think. He said, I'll go. I'm not that happy here anyway. So he can stay. And he was a junior. Mm. But those, we made those kind of sacrifices for each other all the time, whether it was you giving somebody your last dollar, you letting the guy have the car because you think he needs it more than you do, because he's been under some pressures that you're not under. In that little group, we made sacrifices for each other all the time, daily. You know what I mean? This didn't happen like once a month. Daily, somebody was making a sacrifice for them just to keep him there, whatever happened. You know, And we saw a lot of tragedy, you know, guys, the guy's daughter died, mother died. I mean, it had a tremendous effect on us because we were all so close, you know. But that was a very interesting thing. I was there. I was called myself counseling them, and this kid said, "Look, I'll go." Mm. You know. So we're there, and still there are not a lot of black men there. There are not a lot of black professors there. And we're making these adult decisions. Or, you know, we got 19-year-olds counseling 18-year-olds, or 21-year-olds counseling 18-year-olds, because we had no one that could step in there and help us make these decisions. You know, and at the same time, you have to be a student too. You know, you're being a brother and a father and all this, and you have to go to class. I mean, there were days when I emotionally just couldn't even go to class because something happened to me or my brother or somebody else. You know, we would get all wrapped up, sometimes too much, you know, we get too wrapped up in that. But I mean, you're just tired, you know. And so, but again, when you fight for something like that, then you, at least in my case, it made my attachment to Washington Lee stronger. There are other guys who will not come back there. You know.
Do you go back for alumni?
I was on the alumni board. Mm-hmm. And I'm in the Washington Society. I have not been able to get back recently because just scheduling. Mm-hmm. But I like going back to Lexington. You know, I could retire there. I mean, I don't have a problem with Lexington or Washington Lee. Washington Lee was a very good experience for me. You know, I took the bad with the good.
Tell me about law school.
I don't know. I mean, I consider that different than my undergrad years.
We're doing the law school too.
Okay.
So. Tell me about being a student at the law school. First of all, I'm intrigued that a history major goes to law school. That's.
I didn't want to teach history. I didn't know what I wanted to do, to be quite honest. So I figured I'd go to law school. You know, my dad told me I had to work. I didn't want to work. I was having too much fun. I mean, by the time I got out of Washington Lee undergrad, I was having too much fun. I mean, I was having a ball. It had become Washington Lee Country Club for me, too, so I was having a good time.
Oh, now, wait a minute. That's interesting. You had gotten into the country club way of thinking. When my husband and I went to Fancy Dress last month,
mm-hmm.
when we walked out of that place, Henry said, "I swear, every one of those kids was born in a country club."
Well, I mean,
he said they're so comfortable with the whole thing.
No, yeah, I had become comfortable with my lifestyle. You know, I had found my niche. You know, I was over the. I mean, I knew I could graduate. I mean, once you realize you can't graduate, you can make it. That's one thing. I realized I could live there, without. I could live there. I could deal with all the other stuff going on around me. I had my friends. I enjoyed going down the road. I mean, I liked the girls. And I had friends in Lexington. I had a surrogate mother, Margaret Carter, who fed me, who nurtured me, who got mad at me when I was sick and didn't take care of me. And she was there for me. She was there. I talked about her in that article.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had everything I needed. And my parents were only 45 minutes away. Mm-hmm. So I could call the troops to me, or I could go to the troops. So I was comfortable there, and I was having a good time. You know, I had found a way of rising above this other stuff.
So with law school, do they offer scholarships to law school too?
I received, you know, some money to go to law school. My brother was there, and he wanted me to stay there while he played football. I should have left, really. I should have gone to another law school, but I stayed. My brother and sister were in school. We were all in college at the same time. Washington Lee offered me some money, and that was the difference. I should have left, really. Yeah.
So what year did you graduate?
75 and 78.
75 and 70. So you were there when the law school moved into the new building?
Yes. I went to my first year we were in the old law
school. In Tucker Hall.
Which I found stifling. Yeah. I couldn't deal with that.
Uh-huh.
I didn't like going to the library. And, then we went down to the Lewis Hall, which was nicer. You know, my law school years, I don't really know what happened. I mean, it was you were working and you're studying, and I don't know if people had time to be racist or whatever. You know, I don't know. That's kind of a blur. I had my fun as an undergrad, and there were only four of us in my class, again, in the law school, and, you know, we weren't invited into any study groups, you know. I lived in a law dorm.
What's a study group?
You know, guys that get together and study.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think if you're going to learn law, you got to be in a group, and you have to study it, you have to talk about it.
So did you form your own group?
No, because two of the guys were married, the black guys, and one guy was a loner. And I was the youngest of the bunch. I was the only one that came right out of undergrad. So they were a little older than me, a little bit more mature than me, and you know, I was kind of out there on my own. And but again, there were some good guys in my dorm. We had, we had some fun. One of my, turned out to be my best friends was a guy named Mike McDonald, and he was a big football nut, and he got me to play football on a team my second year there in the law school league. And we won. It's funny, he used to have a draft, and he drew the number one pick in the draft our second year. And I had never participated in football there. But I used to tell him that I could quarterback in high school. You know, I would brag to him, you know, tell those little tales. And he believed me. So he stands up, and I didn't go to this meeting, but he stands up, and he got the first pick. And everybody figured he would pick one of the older upperclassmen, you know, that had established himself as a player or something. And he chose me. Everybody looked at him, you know, what? Why did you do that? Are you crazy? You know, who is he? This type of thing. And he came back and told me in my room, he said, you know, E.I. drafted you first. I said, when it came around to you, you drafted me first. He says, no, you were the first person picked, period. I said, yeah, Mike, why? I want to jump out. Why did you do that? Why would you put me under that kind of pressure? Why would you do that? You know. I mean, you could have drafted, you know, these other guys who play, but anyway, he drafted me. So we formed this bond, and we won the title. And we had a crazy team and misfits, basically, but we won the title.
I didn't even know there was a law school league.
It's a touch league.
Uh-huh.
And, and they keep weekly standings, and somebody would write up. There would be a write-up of the games, and they would write the teams. It was really very nice. It was, you know, it was very competitive, too. But I was on our team. I think we had a girl. Did we have a girl on our team? I don't know if she played. She was around. But I was very close to the guys on that team.
Were there many people in your undergraduate class who went on to the law school?
Mm-hmm. There were a number of us. I don't know. I didn't, you know, we weren't friends in undergrad and we weren't friends in law school.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we just knew each other. But we weren't friends. You know, and the law school is competitive and you're into your own thing.
When you make that trek into the law school, do you then say goodbye to what's going on at the undergraduate?
I guess you should have. I didn't.
Did you continue to go to fancy dress and things like that?
I don't know that I went to a fancy dress. I mean, I participated in homecoming. You know, I was an alumnus, right? I went to homecoming. I may have gone to fancy dress if I had the time. But I didn't break my time. I mean, my friends were in the undergrad, mm-hmm. Okay? William Hill and Johnny Morrison were in the law school, you know? And, I felt I had to act like a law student. I couldn't act like I was acting when I was an undergrad, so I didn't hang out too much. But my friends were basically in the undergrad. You know, my brother was still there, and those are the guys that I partied with. And if I went down the road, I would normally go down the road with one of the guys from my undergrad years.
Now, where did you go when you went down the road?
Well, we had expanded going down the road. You know, when I went there, I guess guys went to Mary Baldwin, Sweetbriar, and Hollins, and Southern Seminary, and Randolph-Macon Women's College. But we soon found out that there were not enough black women at those schools. So we had to go into, you know, we had to go into the new world. We had to go to Madison, James Madison, Radford, which was 90 miles away. But there was a whole lot of black women at Radford. And, I mean, the woman I eventually married was at Radford. I met, she was a student at Radford. And so we went to Radford or James Madison or University of Virginia. You know, we had to have some numbers. You know, we go to Hollins, there's the same amount of girls in Hollins as guys at Washington. You know, so, you know, we couldn't, you know, it didn't work too much, too well for us. But we would find, I mean, guys were going to Virginia Tech. You know, we found, you know, well, they found us, you know. But that was rough. That dating game was rough, you know, because we didn't have the money. We got lucky my freshman year because Mark was there with that car. We got very, that was just a gift from God, I think. No, I don't know what would have happened had he not been there. And sophomore year, I think some of the guys were juniors then, and they had cars. They had gone home, worked, and brought back some little, you know, some piece of junk, you know, that we could make it in. And that, going down the road was therapy. You had to do that. Because you otherwise you go crazy.
Still is, from what I can say.
I'm sure it is. I'm glad that, you know, it's good that some things still last. But yeah, law school was different. You know, there was obviously some problems there because we didn't have the numbers. You know, and you're getting people who are coming to Lexington from other schools who are older. So you had people who were not tolerant of what went on. There were a lot of people in the law school who resented that preppy, that stuff that they saw in undergrad. They thought it was childish, you know, because they had gone to bigger schools or different schools. And so they kind of were people you could talk to. I was a black student. Then there were people who came to Washington because they wanted that experience. And so they were kind of rigid in their thinking. But, you know, it's a professional school, so you know, there were things that went on there that I didn't like, but I didn't have time to fight them. Didn't have the numbers to fight them, and didn't have the time to fight them. And, you know, I probably should have gone to another law school. You know, law school, I just went. Don't have the emotional attachment that I have to the undergrad, you know.
Well, we're getting close to the end of the tape. I want you to say whatever you want to say.
Just whatever I want to say.
To end this up. You've given me pure gold.
Well, I'm very proud that I went to school there, Washington Lee. You know, I try to support it any way I can.
Do you help recruit?
No. I think they recruit type students that they want. They don't recruit the type of students I would recruit there. If you had more tape, I could go on and on about that. I don't recruit for Washington Lee. I recruited two people for Washington Lee. My brother, and I had mixed emotions. I, you know, he used to come and visit me, so he wanted to go there. So I had mixed emotions about him coming. I didn't want to be responsible for him coming in, but he made the decision, and I'm glad he did. My cousin, I tried to recruit. They rejected my cousin because some professor, biology professor, probably I think the same one that tried to get the kid kicked out of school. You know, you had to write an essay in those days on the application. He thought that my cousin's essay was weak. Well, and so he rejected it. And I remember Barry Machado, you know, really fought for him. He was a basketball player, so he would have come there, he would have played basketball. As fate would have it, he went to Roanoke College. And so did some other guys, because he went to Roanoke, they went to Roanoke. And Roanoke had been losing year after year. This group of six guys goes to Roanoke. Not only did they turn the program around, in terms of they were ranked nationally when they left there. But they all are successful. Like my cousin's a vice president in Allstate. He was a dean's list student. He's probably to Roanoke what I am to Washington Lee, if you get my drift. The fact that you're here, well, if they were writing a story about Roanoke College, they would go to Kenny Galton. And he's a great man. I'm very proud of him, the man he's become. He was what Washington Lee needed. But they couldn't look past whatever it is their little standards were to see that his family, the same reasons that they let me in there, they should have let him in there. Mm-hmm. Okay, we were similar. We brought up the exact same way, did the same thing in high school. We were leaders. I wasn't that much difference in our grades, but they rejected him. Okay. Once they did that, I stopped recruiting. And I'm not that enthusiastic about the way they recruit kids. I mean, they want a certain black student there. They don't want Eugene Perry, William Hill, Johnny Morrison, Johnny White, Bob Ford, Ernest Freeman. They don't want those guys back there. They're proud that we went there and that we've done okay. They don't want us back there now. And I don't like that. I don't like the fact that they don't want black kids with some character and with some social conscience, okay? When I went back there in November, the first black was inducted into the Hall of Fame. If that had happened while we were there, we'd have put something together for him with the monies and resources that we had for him and his family. We would have been there at the ceremony. How many blacks do you think were there or even knew that that was going on? None. Not one black student spoke to my brother the whole weekend. I mean, he brought his family up there from Tampa. I was there. John Cloud was there from Alaska. And all of Waynesboro was there. A lot of people from home were there. Not one black student said anything to him. And it's embarrassing, actually, as an alumnus, when my friends are there